Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast with my co-host Joshua Crisp and Lucas McCurdy. Here we are at the EFA conference, and it's a rainy day here in Savannah, Georgia, but we're really excited to be here. We've met some of the most interesting people, and one of those interesting people along the way that by providence we've been able to meet Robert Soler.
And thanks for having me.
Thank you, Robert, so much. We're going to get into a little bit of your background, but Josh, this is day two of the conference here. How have things been going?
Things are awesome at this conference. Again, first time at the conference, second day at the conference. We're having a good time. It's pouring rain, but we're having a good time in here. We did not catch the ferry today because of the rain, so we're having fun in Uber rides today. It's awesome to be here with Robert. We had a little bit of an opportunity to talk to Robert just before we got started here, and he's blowing my mind. So I'm learning a lot. I'm looking forward to talking with him some more, and I know our listeners are going to really enjoy hearing what he's talking about.
I don't want to dog any of our previous guests because we've had a lot of smart people on, but Robert may be the smartest person that we've had on the show, especially between you and I. There's
yeah,
plenty of brain power there to dwarf us.
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime you say NASA, and I work for NASA, you know, I mean, you know that the guy's a smart guy, so we're glad to have him with us today.
So with that being said, Robert, why don't you just give us a little bit of an introduction to you, kind of bring us up to speed on kind of how you came up and how your interest led to where they are today.
I guess I would say that I've always kind of had an interaction with light.
Okay.
So I guess I should start that I'm a lighting guy. I'm a lighting nerd by trade and occupation. But I've always grown up with a deep respect for light. Growing up as a kid, I actually was allergic to the sun. And it took years of trial and tribulation and not knowing what exactly I was allergic to until ultimately find out that it was the sun that I was allergic to. And it was an interesting time for me because I didn't know what was going on. So I think that I've grown up really having a large respect for the sun and the light as well. And so went and, you know, got an electrical engineering degree. Then I thought that lighting was really something that I was gravitating towards. So I got a master's there. And then from there, I had the opportunity to work at NASA. And at NASA, I helped put the first LED light on International Space Station. Saw it go up with astronauts holding it up. And that was a really cool moment for me. And afterwards, I started to learn about, you know, the ability to change people's biology. I did a lot of photobiological experiments there at NASA, but the coolest one was about circadian rhythms. And so what's really cool about NASA and International Space Station is it orbits the Earth every 90 minutes. And so they don't get a 24-hour sun
right,
coming up every day. So we had to create a solution for them that basically recreates that 24-hour cycle inside the International Space Station.
Fascinating.
And so what that does is actually helps all those astronauts synchronize with one another, but also sleep better at night, be more productive during the day, just kind of organize their mentality, but also their biology.
Interesting.
And so so that is kind of a synopsis of where I came from, but ever since then, I was really passionate about it. And actually, I just started a PhD in behavioral neuroscience because after I learned about, you know, what the technology could do, I started wanting to understand more about the biology. So I went to UC San Diego, which is where I'm at now in San Diego. to do a PhD in behavioral neuroscience. And so UC San Diego is the center of circadian biology. So there's all these circadian nerds that come up together. There's 29 different labs. And so there, I still really started learning a lot about the biological interactions. And so how light works is it's a really cool interaction that we have with light.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So, and you know, as we were talking, I was fascinated with your background and what all you've done and the whole space station thing. I mean, that's mind boggling.
The ISS is my favorite satellite to watch as it goes across the sky. It's really cool. We love it.
Yeah. To think that you've had a big part of helping that team is fascinating to me. But then as of recently, you've kind of realized, wow, there's a huge application here for senior housing, design, and programming. Now we're here at the EFA conference. We're just meeting you. I think you just did a talk here. So tell us a little bit, okay, bridge the gap.
Yeah.
And tell us how your background and this technology, like what use do you see that for senior housing, programming, and services?
Yeah, so you know, it's hard to think that we're a lot like a space station, but in fact we are, because we spend so much time indoors. We spend more than 90% of our time indoors. And so really what we understand is that, you know, our circadian rhythms are tied to the solar cycle. That sun showing up at the same time every day, that is actually our cue, and we organize our biology around that. Our circadian rhythms synchronize to that. And so when we spend all our time indoors, we lose that connection. And so circadian lighting is really kind of replicating that indoors. When you can't get outside, it brings those light signals inside the environment. And so it's really important for elderly specifically, because a lot of times they don't have the opportunity to get outside. But moreover, when they have circadian disruption, that turns into behavioral outcomes, that turns into more napping during the daytime, that turns into more wandering at night, that turns into things like sundowning that comes at the same time each day, and it turns into increased cognitive decline, so a faster acceleration of Alzheimer's. So there's a lot of behavioral outcomes as a result of not getting the right lighting, and it's really quite cool that, well, important that lighting plays such a critical role in all that, and something that's often overlooked, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so in our communities, you know, I'm an operator. We've developed communities. We operate communities. We manage communities. And we see that, you know, I think we see the evidence oftentimes. You mentioned sundowners. You know, that's something we talk about a lot in this space. There's so much dementia. There's so much Alzheimer's. And how that impacts behaviors, because these residents, they are indoors more, even though I think we're doing a good job now, a better job, sure, with designing communities that are getting more light coming in. We're getting these great wonder gardens or courtyards where they can get outside, but they still, you know, are spending more time indoors, and we see these behaviors. So you think that there's an application for senior housing that if you implement this lighting and special engineered lighting in the communities, that it can actually improve quality of life because of that.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
How, just kind of explain to us, I mean, how does it work?
You know, it's very simple. So, and really cool. In 2001, we discovered that we have another photoreceptor in our eye that basically drives this entire response. It's not a visual photoreceptor. It's a non-visual photoreceptor. So it doesn't contribute to vision or anything like that. It goes a different pathway to a different part of our brain, the part of the brain that controls our circadian rhythms. And so so that's really quite interesting, because when you understand that, you could actually use LED lighting technology to create a spectrum that pinpoints that and creates a daytime signal, a heightened daytime signal. And what's cool about that is you could actually do that at any color temperature that you want. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have these really cool and kind of stark color temperatures, like they talk about 6,500 Kelvin. That's like a very very blue, not so appealing white light. It's not what you expect to see in a residential type home. Mm-hmm. You'd want to see something closer to 27 or 3,000 Kelvin, which is more like an incandescent light bulb. Mm-hmm. And so if you understand the biology of what you could do, you could actually create this spectrum that pinpoints the biology to create those daytime signals in a color temperature and a color light that you want, that you could actually, you know, see in your space that meets the aesthetic, meets the design goals, but also provides that daytime signal. But but to go to your overall question, which is what's the point, mm-hmm. is that we're really looking for a bright light signal. That's our daytime signal that we synchronize to. Mm-hmm. So clear delineation of day versus night mm-hmm. to our biology is the point of circadian lighting, is just to replicate that 24-hour cycle day in and day out, and gives our biology something to synchronize to, so we know when to be awake, we know when to be asleep, and our biology kind of falls in line.
That's
so
fascinating.
Talk to us about how this research has played out, meaning give us some real-life findings on where you guys have actually executed the design of this. Maybe it's a new building, or maybe it's one of these legacy properties that's been around for several decades and just wasn't designed to let that kind of light in, or maybe it's the way it's positioned or location, and how that opportunity of maybe a retrofit into this has actually impacted lifestyle, behavior, and dignity in these senior homes.
Yeah, so that's why I'm here today, or here at this conference, was giving a post-occupancy evaluation. It wasn't a retrofit, it was a new design, okay. But they were one of the first to implement circadian lighting, and so it was really a good opportunity to go after the facts, you know, a year after it's been designed, and go, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what do you think about the circadian lighting design? And so, you know, it's always hard to get, you know, clear data that is only isolating the lighting portion of it. So it is difficult to get anything. But it is a lot of anecdotal evidence where the staff says they notice a complete difference of the occupants here versus previous places that they worked at. When we interviewed the occupants, they say they have no sleep problems. They don't find themselves napping during the daytime.
Really?
The staff says there's no evidence of sundowning. And I think that the most telling thing that we saw in this evaluation is that the client, the owner of the facility, we asked him point blank, would you do it again? And he said in a heartbeat. He said he'd absolutely do it again. And in fact, when they did it, they kind of limited it to the common areas. And what he would do if he did it again, he would actually do it everywhere.
Gotcha.
Because he really believed in the value that it provided to his occupants. And it was, so I think that's really the most telling thing, is that when someone, buyer's remorse, if you will, and this particular occupant, I'm sorry, owner, would absolutely do it again.
This is a really interesting topic to me, because it seems like such new findings. When you say things like, we just found out something about the eye in 2001, it seems, yeah. I mean, it's really, that's not a long time ago to find these things out. And so it seems like we find these things and then people get busy working on the technology to be able to solve the problem for something. I mean, for all of humanity, we've been programmed by the sun and nighttime and daytime. It's a real thing about our biology. And so the fact that this is a relatively new concept is really exciting. Yeah.
I think so. So, you know, I want to speak from an operator standpoint, because we do have a lot of operators that are probably out there listening. We've got a diverse audience. But, you know, so we're busy trying to run all these departments and manage the community, and then we get blasted with, whoa, now we need to be paying attention to circadian rhythm and there's this new technology that they use in NASA, and it just sounds very overwhelming. So break it down, like, for an operator that's busy but wanting to do some really cool things, or a developer or a designer, I mean, where are resources where you go to really find out about what's out there, what's being developed, to find out the why, this research? And then, you know, when I'm hearing this, it sounds like this could be expensive. You know, any new technology, there's kind of a premium. And, you know, so is that true? And also, is there good news on the horizon with, like, other technology as it becomes more common? Is it going to get
that's
more
right.
affordable?
Yep. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So there's a... So there's a lot of different competing technologies out there, and it'll eventually converge. But really, what we try to do is we try to create a very simple system. If you understand what our biology is looking for, it really is a biologically bright day and a biologically dark night. And so we could create that system. And so you could absolutely do it on a very simple control system. We really try to streamline it so that it understands what's going on outside and tries to replicate that inside from a biological spectrum standpoint. Mm-hmm. Not so much the color of what's going on out there, because it's usually 6,500 Kelvin, which not too many people are excited about bringing that inside. But really what we've tried to do is try to create something that is super simple. And when you take out all the bells and whistles out of that, you can absolutely make it affordable. And so that's what we really try to do is try to create, give you the biological solution without any of the bells and whistles and the marketing stuff, to get you the most value.
So the process, I'm a developer, I'm an owner, and I'm starting the process, and I'm thinking as an operator, wow, this is really cool. You know, how do I even start the process of getting something like this in my community? What does that process look like? Where should we begin? Is this kind of something that we decide on, you know, way after we've already got the plans developed? Do we need to be planning on this on the very front end? When do we start talking about this?
Yeah, I think that so it'd make a lot of sense to do it on the front side of things, because mm-hmm. I think that there's some basic design elements to this that you could, in order to do it well, things like cove lighting is a really good way to apply the light that you need in a very comfortable way. Mm-hmm. Making sure that you have access to cove lighting is like probably step number one. You could still do it without the cove lighting, but that is a critical way to make sure that you're getting it without any glare points that are going to be a little bit uncomfortable for the patient. So that's a really good way to get the right light levels. Mm-hmm. And then you could use that to deliver the right spectrum as well.
So if we're in the plan phases, we've got our architect, we've got our designers, is that the time when we really want to partner up with someone like you guys and just get you the plans and let you make recommendations on how we do this?
Yeah, so what we try to do is we try to help you through the process. So what we don't want to, so we have a company, Bios Lighting, and we have a product that we sell, and I don't want to say we don't, but we want to make sure that the solution's correct. So we don't want to just sell you a product and then walk away. We want to walk you through the process, look at your designs, make sure that it's going to be the right solution, and make sure it's going to actually achieve the goals that you wanted to have with circadian lighting. So you come to us, and we'll look at that design and give you a solution that's actually going to do what you want to do and make sure that it's in that budget that is critical for everyone.
So, you know, new development, that's one thing. You've got ground up. What about, you know, a business that Lucas and I are in a lot and mm-hmm. taking old things and repurposing them?
Sure.
And, you know, this technology wasn't available, you know,
sure.
years ago or even recently. So is there hope for those existing communities where you can retrofit something like
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's probably where the most opportunity is, because in those retrofit buildings, there probably wasn't a lot of windows. There probably wasn't a lot of access for daylight. And so that's really where the most opportunity is to take those plans and, you know, bring them over, and we'll take a look at it and see what we could do to try to implement a solution for you.
Cool.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
Yeah, this is one of the kind of the icing on the cake to be at the EFA conference and to be able to get introduced to technologies like this. And we're super grateful to have Robert here to it's very, very interesting of your background and kind of where you know, all the different mile markers that got you to this point for you to come out of a really you know, very visible area like NASA, right?
Yep.
And then to follow your passions into this type of technology so that it can impact our seniors. We need more people like that coming into this space to bring that outside interest. And so we're very, very grateful for your time. Our lovely producer, Sarah, has given us a cue on our time. Speaking of time, and so, Robert, thank you so much. I know you're going to be traveling back home to your family in California. We wish you the best, safe travels.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll make sure that we connect on our social channels with you, because one of the big part of our podcast, I say pretty much at every show, is that we don't want the conversation to end when the audio is over.
That's right.
And so please post your questions to Robert and to Bridge the Gap on our social channels, and we promise that we will engage and answer those questions to get you those resources. So another great show. Josh, thank you so much. Robert, appreciate you, and thank you for listening to Bridge the Gap.
See ya.
Thanks for having me.